Hi, and welcome to the Living Waters for the World podcast, hosted by Kendall Cox and Doug Deppies. A space to share stories, inspire others, and learn from other water saints working in this ministry together.
Welcome to Living Waters for the World's very first podcast. I'm your host, Kendall Cox.
And I'm Doug Deppies.
And, you know, Doug, it's not just a new year. It's a new decade.
It is. 2020.
It's a time for us to pause and look back at where water has taken us and for us to also look to where water will take us. And I'm excited to think about that.
We've got a lot to celebrate.
Absolutely.
Over 25 years of Living Waters for the World. We have over 1,000 systems now in the world. It's been a great time. And so the new decade's going to be great. So we've created this podcast to share those stories, to share your story, to hear from people that have worked with this ministry together all over the world in the last 25 years, in the last however long you've been a part of this ministry. And so we want to share that and let everyone else hear that and be inspired and get to know what you've done, how God has been leading you through this ministry.
That reminds me, I was visiting with a pastor, Ludmila, in Cuba, and she said something that really stuck with me. She said, "This is beautiful work. It's hard work, and it's beautiful work." And I've never forgotten that. And if you think about it, we've heard different water partners say that exact same thing. They may have used different words, but this is beautiful work and it's hard. So we want to share the struggles, the challenges, and also to find the way that folks have come together and overcome those.
For sure.
And we hope that folks will share this podcast and that they'll share their stories with us. It's a real privilege to get to hear those stories, and we hope to share them very broadly. So for our first podcast, it is only fitting that we go back to the beginning and we start
the wildcat.
That's right. We start with our founder, Reverend Will Howie. He is our much beloved clean water ambassador. And in this first podcast, Will is going to share with us some of the lessons that he learned along the way at the School of Hard Knocks, as he says, and he'll share some insights with us as well. And I love listening to Will tell the story, those way back stories. I've heard them and heard them, and they don't get old. And I hear something new. Wait, you've never told me that before. Well, let's hop over to our conversation with Will. So we're here today, Doug and I, with Will Howie, the founder of Living Waters for the World and the Clean Water Ambassador for Living Waters for the World. And we're at 1,000 Water Partnerships.
Unbelievable.
Isn't it?
Yes, truly.
Who would have thunk?
It's a miracle.
It really is. Yeah. So I think a question that a lot of folks would love to hear is, what were you thinking? I mean, why? What made you do this thing?
My heart got turned over. I was reading a small article in 1989, and it was in the Presbyterian Survey, the monthly magazine, and there was a small picture of a woman and a child, and it was talking about the critical crisis of water, contaminated water in the world, and now 3 million children were dying each year from preventable diseases that were associated with it. And that just upset me hugely. And so it was in that moment where I had an epiphany where the name came, Living Waters for the World. It pulled the center name in, the for the world comes out of bread for the world. But that was all. But it was one of those things that wouldn't stop chewing on my heart.
So yeah, here we are in the Synod of Living Waters. And so it was just the name that came at first.
Yeah, just the name.
Then what?
The reality of finishing seminary, I was about a year and a half away from that, had one kid in college, one kid was not quite in, Danny was in kindergarten, actually, and then another kid there who kicking and screaming to Decatur in the 10th grade, in the 11th grade, fell in love with the place, but there was all of that reality, ordination exams, getting a call, and so I tucked it away to get through that process. And in June of 1990, I graduated from seminary and got a call to First Presbyterian Church in Pontotoc, Mississippi. And the presbytery exec of St. Andrew Presbytery asked if I would be the very part-time hunger action enabler for St. Andrew Presbytery. That's out of the Presbyterian Hunger Program, which is funded by One Great Hour Sharing, which is collected on Easter Sunday morning, and it is the foundation financially for the Presbyterian Church USA's missions of compassion, Presbyterian disaster assistance, self-development of people, and hunger. And so it was out of organizing our churches and congregations here in St. Andrew around hunger work and the real strong connection that I always had that water and clean water was integral to proper nutrition that allowed me to begin thinking about how do you clean up water? How does one go about that? So being able to have some time that was focused on doing something is where I was able to start doing the paperwork, making the phone calls, start just fleshing out this until then just a name.
Did you feel like there was a call to a certain place you wanted to work or just the opportunity arose?
All God's children. It was always sort of a universal global thing. And the overwhelmingness of that was what keeps pulling you back down to the concrete. You have to have a system. You have to be in a community. And so, but always there's been the sense of this dirty, rotten, crying shame that millions of children die from contaminated water.
You know, what's amazing to me is that I've heard bits and pieces of this story probably a dozen times. And every time I hear it, I get a new little detail. So I wasn't quite sure what church brought you to St. Andrew Presbytery, but it was Pontotoc.
Pontotoc, yes.
Awesome. That's wonderful.
A second career minister they're willing to take a chance on. I've got pictures from the first water treatment hardware that we developed, which was a bust. And we even field tested it across the border with Puentes de Cristo. And then it was too salty, what it did in the water purification process. But great pictures outside of the fellowship hall door where five other Hunger Action Enabler husbands and others came down as we put the equipment together and tested it.
So that first go at it was a failure.
Oh, yeah.
And then... You failed better, and you failed better.
The only way to learn is through a hard knock.
That's right. That's right. I want to hear who came alongside you in those early years that made a difference.
Good question. Concurrently with what was going to be Living Waters for the World, in St. Andrew Presbytery, we were working with a presbytery-to-presbytery partnership in Cameroon, West Africa. And that was taking on all the classics of a water access. Spring box protection, running engineering lines from spring heads down into the village, digging wells. We tried hand percussion drilling to see if that was something that low tech would work. Through that process, I learned that water access approach is way, way too complicated. Drilling wells is water access. There's no guarantee you spend $10,000 and pump a hole into the ground that you're going to hit water. And so that was one of the things going on. But it was in a National Hunger Action Enabler Conference in California, that was late 91, early 92, that they pulled all HAEs every 2 years together for a national conference. And one of the things they did was to let all Senate HAEs get together and caucus, as it were. And we found we were, 8 of us, really a compatible bunch of folks. And we agreed that we needed to meet back in the Senate after this was over with to promote each other's work and do that sort of thing. So the project really did grow out of that Presbyterian Hunger Program enabled Presbytery-wide network. And the second or the third face-to-face meeting, December 5th, 1992, I presented a project, a 5-page working paper called Living Waters for the World. And that technology I told you about that didn't work, that was at the heart of that, but started laying out the need, the way to approach it, what was going to be necessary to build a team to do that. And they enthusiastically endorsed that, but being Presbyterians and decently in order, they couldn't take any official action, but it was in September of 1993 with working through Warner Donnell, who was a staff Senate associate there in Nashville, Brentwood, Tennessee, to be actual. It helped us shepherd us into and through the process. And so at that synod meeting at Skerrett Bennett College in Nashville, the synod approved Living Waters for the World. Says it's a crazy idea, but go for it. See what you can do. We authorize you to figure it out and come tell us what happens.
And so how long was it between that point and the first system?
Just under 3 years. The Women's Lib movement back in the day, one of their sayings was, you've got to kiss a lot of frogs before you find your prince.
I never knew that that was a statement of Women's Lib. But, okay.
Another one is, a woman needs a man like a fish needs a bicycle.
Okay.
Those are the
I've heard that one. I've heard that one. And so you did some frog kissing.
Yes, as we started looking at the parameters of what we wanted to be someplace internationally, but close, where we could do day type of trips would not be unfeasible to get down to a place and come back. The U.S.-Mexican border. Presbyterian Border Ministry was a part of the Worldwide Mission Agency of the denomination. And so Jerry Garcia was the head of it located in San Antonio, Texas. So Jerry and I got in touch and he started introducing me. I think I went to three different sites on the border to see if the right combinations of things, started testing water. I had never done this before. I was learning as I went, started going in, talking to people, and finally we found a partner in Puentes de Cristo, which means Bridges of Christ, that was based outside of McAllen, Texas, across from Reynosa, Mexico. And they had four health clinics and all, and they had a young volunteering mission from Jacksonville, Florida, named Bryce Rogers. And Gilberto and Maria Mendina were the co-directors. Well, he was the director. Maria was the director of nursing for their health plan. But through their good offices, we started working and putting it together. And in April of 1996, 2 years, 9 or 10 months after approval, we went down and put our first system.
That's actually pretty fast. You have to lay that foundational stuff.
That's so
you can't
critical.
Fly over that.
Or... You want me to tell you about the first system?
I'd love to hear about that.
It went into the Prince of Peace Presbyterian Church in a small town outside of Empalme. And 2 months into the operation of that, the city fathers thought that they really needed some bakshish, some little help along for legal permissions and other things like this. And Puentes de Cristo was upset as we were. And so Bryce called up and said, hey, we're setting a new mission up and putting a health clinic in this small colonia. Can we move it? And since we designed a board that could go on a piece of plywood, I said, sure, do it. So they, within 2 or 3 months after the first installation, actually disattached it from that first place and moved it into a health clinic in the village where it really became operational.
One thing I really, really love about Living Waters and everyone that's here is the flexibility that has that, you know, and that we're not afraid to change things. We're not afraid to try something new, and it might fail, and it might work out, you know, and I think that comes a lot from you, and I think we've continued that, and I really enjoy that. And so has there been ways that you've been intentional about creating that flexibility and allowing that to happen?
Well, you just used the two key words. We have several mottos. The first one is that Jesus Christ is living water for our bodies and our souls. It's got to have physical and spiritual, all of that together. The second motto is flexibility and creativity are essential, because we learn. I'm a non-linear thinker, so I'm able to retain stuff and go here and there. So for me, the idea, okay, they said no, this door closed, well, okay. And so flexibility and creativity became early hallmarks to be able to keep that openness to the reality of what you're dealing with.
So 96, the first system went in. You could have stuck a fork in it, said, we're done.
Well, one of our hunger action neighbors actually suggested, she didn't use the word sticking a fork in it, but it was very similar. It was been such a challenge that she said, you know what we really need to do is to say, we did it, celebrate it, we've done it. Let's go home. Bryce called back several months later saying he came one time, called up and said, hey, this system is working so good. When are you going to put it down in our second health clinic? Bryce lined up getting the first four systems into the four health clinics. Maria Mendina, the registered nurse director, came up with another one of our mottos, which is clean water is medicine, because she was able to see with the record keeping that they were doing at the clinic that gastrointestinal diseases disappeared when a family became committed to drinking clean water. And so Bryce was also responsible for us connecting with an orphanage on the other side of Reynosa with a system, and then our sixth system in Nogales, Nogales, with Water Links, with those good folks there.
But these six systems, what time frame are we talking about?
96. Presbyterian women at the national level have given us two thank offerings and one birthday offering. The first thank offering they gave us would have been in 98 or 99, and that was for the third or system. It took us a couple for years to get those going. But because of Bryce, he had connections in Honduras through the mission, and so that's where I went down to Tegucigalpa, started hooking up with folks there, and then that system, a guy from West Virginia, George Brandon, was working in Haiti. He heard about our work in a God sort of way, and that got us into Haiti, and so the first three countries were those. In the first 10 years of operating, from 1993 of approval, a process to 2003 when the Clean Water U idea was born, we've done 15 systems in 10 years, which was an average of 1.5 systems per year. And it was sitting around in May of 2003, David Snellgrove, who's moved from being Presbytery exec to Senate exec, Steve Young, who was very part-time administrator, and I, celebrating what had happened, but saying, what good have we done? I mean, at this rate, 1.5 systems, and there's where our next big epiphany came in. Stop doing it ourselves, teach others, train them.
That was a huge epiphany, just at the right time. I heard someone recently say that, that was the Holy Spirit was really showing off at that point.
I love that.
So showed up at
And what had happened is that by that first 10 years, we had figured out the 102, 103, 2 and 3 pieces. We didn't call them that, but we realized we had to have some sort of formal partnership and a way to manage that. We had to do health and hygiene and spiritual education because it said we can't. If people know how to use it, then how can they don't know why, then they don't use it. And then the hardware. So all the pieces of that school of hard knocks had been coming together, and you're saying it's the timing was perfect is indeed right.
You know, we, often things like that get revealed, but we see so many examples around the world of mission, great intentions that have just gone awry. They've gone to waste. It's absolutely heartbreaking because we don't internalize and bake it right into the recipe that relationships coming alongside each other. What can we do together that it's going to be hard for us to do if we're working separately?
Well, and we work and wrestle with that. And now what we say at Clean Water U is we're with, not doing it for. And the idea that this is part of the family. Another way that I've said it is that water, clean water, is really just a means to an end. It's not the primary thing. It just gets us to building the relationships with brothers and sisters throughout the world that we didn't know we had. Different brothers and sisters by a different mother.
That's right. I remember coming through as a student, and I had this belief that I'm coming through Clean Water U, my church. We are going to install this water system for this community. Yeah. And it didn't take long of being here to learn that, oh no, let go of that preconceived notion because it is wrong. That is not what
get
we're
flexible,
going to
kiddo.
That's
get
right.
Creative,
that's right.
You know.
Thank you for being patient. Thank you for being patient. So it sounds like you've named quite a few elements that showed up as a little bit of the secret ingredient, the secret sauce to Living Waters of the World and the keeping
many
things going.
Yeah. The technical side of things is owed in part through the Presbyterian Hunger Program, which I was talking to the HAE in Eastern Tennessee and saying, I want to come up and see if we can stir up interest in that. Well, New Providence Presbyterian Church. I'm blanking on the name. The church where Neil Dunwoody was a member was an engineer who was very involved in water, and he got excited from the technical side. Went to Oak Ridge, Tennessee, part of the Tri-City area there with Knoxville, and met an engineer named Doug Allen at First Presbyterian Oak Ridge. And then Neil and Doug and I got together and back and forth, and Doug was saying, you got to filter the water. And Neil was saying, no, you got to disinfect the water. And so the idea came from filter and then disinfect, and that was where the first workable system came up out of was in going out into the world looking just to get partners and then finding the two guys who had the technical experience and the engineering background to say, here's what it works. But engineers did. George Ho is a swimming pool contractor. We called him Wild Man and Living Waters for the World. Well, he's an engineer. Well, look at all these John Coates, but all these little tubies here. And so George did the plumbing, cleaned it up, put it into 1-inch pipe, changed the number of valves, the number of connection pieces, and that's where the first discernible functioning clean water system came out. And we learned that with Puentes de Cristo. Our boards evolved in those earliest systems.
Oh, God bless all those folks who were brave enough to put up a board and then to tweak it.
That's right.
Revised, always revising.
Always revising.
Always revising.
And then we had engineers like J.C. Goldman, Ramey Van Compenoe, and Jack Wendleton, who had the professional credentials, American Water Works Association, AWWA. So when people would call up and say, what do you people think you're doing down there? Where'd you get all these ideas? Well, would you like to talk to our American Water Association engineers? I can give you their names. And Ramey and JC had names that people actually would recognize. So they were part of the things that helped legitimate and to prove that what we were doing was not just a bunch of wackos out there.
That's always important. Living Waters for the World very much grew up in the Presbyterian Church USA
and the Synod of Living Waters. From the very beginning, it spilled over out from the beginning. And so the Presbytery level of what I was saying earlier with our work here was too small of an area to pull together this person from there, this person from over here. I gave up on the idea that you had to have a whole church supporting you or you had to have a whole presbytery behind you. If we got Ramey from Houston and Katie Badunner from San Antonio and George Plough from Havre, Mass., then together we started building this collaborative team on the different parts of the world.
Oh, that's beautiful. What would you say makes Living Waters for the World unique? There are organizations who work on water, and we're grateful for them.
Oh, indeed.
What makes us unique?
We're weird.
We're weird. I love that. Anything else?
Well, I guess it could be expanded a little bit. The idea coheres for people. One of the things is you say every child needs the right to grow up with drinking clean water, and nobody says what a dumb idea. It's so gospel-based. There's a lot of things. We attract a brilliant bunch of people. We're all wildcats, has been my term for calling, because have you ever tried to herd wildcats? You, Kendall Cox, came up with that great video. You still have access to that
video? Yeah, it's some commercial that I showed at a training.
Oh, you did
training.
It for a number of years.
Yeah, yeah.
Of cowboys in all of their Western gear, and they're herding cats.
If you had to sum up what God has done, is doing, is going to do, like in one word or a phrase. I'll give you more than one word because I know you're a pastor. Something come to mind?
One word to sum up?
Or a phrase of what God's been doing with Living Waters to the World through all of this huge group of volunteers. I mean, we've had over 2,300 people come through our training trained other people.
Yeah.
We're all in train the trainer mode
so
that it keeps going.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's how to sum it up. God is doing a new thing out of the old, and it's really cool to be in a part of this dynamic whole that keeps building, and it's an organic unity growing up through the power of the Spirit. Working, so all things are possible. All things, even clean water one day for all God's children.
May it be so. Amen. May it be so. You know, we've talked, here we are. We are at that point of 1,000 water partnerships. And I'm wondering, when you think about that next 1,000 and the dreams that are coming, the seeds that have already been planted that are already starting to grow.
Yeah.
Anything jumping out at you dream-wise?
Yeah, I think it's realistic that we can get all God's children with clean water. It's going to take a while, but we've got some, like you said, some exciting seeds have been planted. Some are growing with where we take this clean water U training model, which is one of the unique things about what Living Waters is, the way we train the trainer, equip the trainer, and then work through our networks to sustain the partners. You asked when we went out to California to Camp Calvin Crest about, with this clean water, you will roll all the way out to the West Coast. And by George, it did. And then a couple of years ago, we wondered, and you wondered, if we could roll this clean water, you will, into a different configuration in Ghana with the Ghanaian Presbyterian Church. And that baby has rolled over there.
Turns out, with God's help, anything's possible.
Anything's possible. Yeah. And there's other possibilities one day. Why be limited to us just going, Living Waters just going along besides congregations and presbyteries? What if we started going alongside national churches and empowering others to work at a level out of the experience in the almost 30 years, coming on 30 years of experience that we've got?
So we've seen a lot of change over this last 20-something years. Mm-hmm. Thinking about the next 1,000, the next 20 years, what's not going to change? What's going to stay the same?
What has to stay the same is the fact that everything changes except the core of the heart of the project. That we have to be relational. We'll have to be flexibly creative along the way, because there's going to be, with climate warming and changing rapidly, the need is going to increase. And so learning how to empower and people more and more to address this critical part of human life. The spirit of, the heart of, the soul of Living Waters for the World is what hopefully will always be a vibrant, never changing, ever changing thing.
Love that. We always must keep learning together.
Amen.
And I'm wondering, what is the best advice you have ever been given all of your years with Living Waters for the World as the founder, the executive director, now the Clean Water Ambassador? What's the best advice pertaining to this essential work that God so clearly called you to?
Have fun.
Have fun. That's excellent advice. Well, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for being partners within this. Getting some weirdo like Doug coming in from out of the blue. What a spirit-led thing. And even a Yankee you are. And
is he a Yankee? Yeah,
you?
A little bit.
I know.
You know, it's part of the beauty of this is all the different accents that y'all have.
All y'all have.
That's right. Thank you, Will.
Thank you for
saying yes and continuing to say yes. The answer to how is yes.
There you go.
Amen.
That preach anytime.
With God's help, all things are possible. Isn't that the truth? 1,000 water systems in 26 countries. And now we got a podcast. Look at us go. So we're going to have some fun here.
I love it. I love the idea of fun. And I think what I'd like for everyone to hear is this is our podcast, and we want to hear from you. We want to know, what topics would you like most to hear about in the future? Who would you like to hear from? Maybe you and your team have a great story to share. I'll bet you do. So
for sure, share it with us.
Let us hear from you. You know, you can contact us via our website, www.livingwatersfortheworld.org. You can also get more information there. I hope that you'll share this podcast. You'll follow us if you're on social media. We're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, we're on Twitter. And, you know, Doug, if we had sponsors, this is the place where we'd say, today's episode was brought to you by, but we don't have any sponsors yet because we're just newbies.
Nope.
We're learning as we go and as we do.
And learning together.
And that's a great way to do it. I'm here today coming from the Mississippi Delta. And for those folks who may not know this, this is the birthplace of Kermit of Sesame Street, Kermit the Frog. Doug, you might remember this if you watched some Sesame Street when you were little.
Uh-huh.
You might remember that at the end of every episode, they say, today's episode was brought to you by the letters M and Q and the number 7. Maybe our episode today is brought to you by the letter H and the number 2 and the letter O.
Sounds good.
And
yep.
And we'll see if those letters and numbers change. And certainly the number 1,000 it's a big round number. We look to the next 1,000 and we give thanks to God and to all of our partners who come together. So until next time, let's keep learning. And the best way to do that is together.
Together. Yeah.
Living Waters for the World is a nonprofit that believes all God's children deserve clean water. And we believe that is possible by working together as partners. It's not only the water that has changed, we are too. To learn more about us, visit our website, www.livingwatersfortheworld.org, or find us on social media.